It's Saturday, the 26th of December, 2015. Happy birthday to Corey Jefferson. And welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by Moneyball.com.au and the Great Santini. And that's great spelt with a 3 instead of the E, of course, because that's how all the great podcast sponsors do it. If you want to be like the Great Santini and sponsor the podcast for a day, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes. And don't forget to check out Moneyball.com.au. They are Australia's best daily fantasy sports site. Make sure you're getting involved there, entering the contests, hopefully taking home some of the contests and winning some of the money, and having fun while you're doing it. Hope everybody had a very nice Christmas for those of you who celebrated. I think all that Christmassy stuff is now over with. The Christmas Day games are finished. That's what we're going to be reviewing here, and then previewing the 13 games for Boxing Day. And if you don't know what Boxing Day is, Boxing Day is the day after Christmas, It's what it currently is here in Australia. But there is obviously a lot to get to. 5 Christmas Day games, 13 Boxing Day games.
Let's get to it.
Cool. The monstrous line of the night goes to none other than Anthony Davis of the New Orleans Pelicans. He was he couldn't get his team over the line, but he was fantastic. In his first Christmas Day appearance, he played 50 minutes. He went 29-15. He hit a 3. Had 4 assists, 4 steals, 3 blocks. Not so good on the percentages, 13 of 29 and then 2 of 3 from the free throw line. But otherwise, a very, very nice performance from Anthony Davis. And we know that his issue is durability, that's the word I'm looking for. But otherwise, the numbers have been pretty impressive. His last 2 weeks have yielded 24 and 11.5 with 3.3 blocks and over a steal a game. Really doing almost to the level he was last season. Not quite there yet. He's scoring a little bit less. He's grabbing more rebounds. He's getting less assists, less steals, and less blocks. So he's not quite at that same level he was last season. But he's still a clear top 10 player. Just not quite living up to that number one projection that a lot of people had him in the preseason. But if you own him, I'm not too panicking about what's happening with Anthony Davis. The waiver wire line of the guy goes to a guy who I probably will never give the award to again, and that is Jason Terry of the Houston Rockets. He played 17 minutes and was a perfect 3 of 3 from the field. He had 12 points, including 2 threes, nabbed 3 steals as well in his 17 minutes. There is no call to go and add Jason Terry in any leagues outside of very deep 16-team formats. That's about it. He's been getting roughly 16, 17 minutes a game most nights. There are some nights, though, where he won't play or he'll play less than 10 minutes when they decide to run more Ty Lawson out there. He's basically just there's no other teams playing. The Rockets are on. I need some threes. Maybe I need a steal and I need to not hurt my free throw percentage. That's all Jason Terry is at that point, unless something happens to Patrick Beverley and to Ty Lawson and then he's forced into 30 minutes a game. But apart from that, an out-of-the-box game from Terry with a big accumulation of steals and a great night in terms of his efficiency, but nothing to really see for us in fantasy leagues. The young gun of the night goes to D'Angelo Russell of the Los Angeles Lakers, who was great in this game, played 28 minutes, 16 points, 7 rebounds, 2 threes, 2 steals, and 1 block, and did that all while Byron Scott was neglecting to play him for big chunks of the game. He was red hot to start the game. I think he had 11 points in the first 12 minutes of action, of his action in the first half, and then proceeded to sit out the first 8 minutes of the second half because Byron Scott. But proved fantastic. Got the Lakers back in it, along with the fact that Doc Rivers was playing his bench, which is definitely the worst unit in the league, and that allowed the Clippers to squander a 28-point lead to get the Lakers back within single digits. And a lot of that was Russell, and a lot of that was the Clippers being terrible. But Russell, he just needs to be unleashed by Byron Scott. I don't know why Byron Scott is continually going out in the media and just hanging shit on this guy. Every opportunity he gets, it's basically just, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. Russell, I think his quote today was, Russell only knows 20% of the playbook. He doesn't know how to run anything. How about you get him out on the court and let him work it out? We don't need to be seeing Lou Williams out there. We need D'Angelo Russell out there playing 30, 32 minutes a night. And that, look, that's fine at the moment. He's getting 26, 27 minutes off the bench. He shouldn't be running in the bench unit. He should be working with Jordan Clarkson, working out how these guys are going to work together. Working with Julius Randle. They're the three guys who are moving forward. Roy Hibbert and Kobe Bryant aren't going to be here past this season. You need to work these guys together. You need to work. Obviously, there's going to be other pieces come into Los Angeles, but these guys need to work together. He needs to play bigger minutes. I don't understand Byron Scott for so many reasons. He is out and out the worst coach in the NBA, and it's not even close to me. Russell is improving. He needs to work a lot on his percentages, though. He's a 40 and 68% guy. That's killing both of those categories for you. And he's only averaging 3.3 assists, so he's not doing massive amounts. He's still a good guy to own at the back end of a 12-team league. But he's not really threatening the top 100 at all, especially with those percentages. That is a real concern, especially those free throws. For him to be shooting sub 70% as a point guard is obviously not ideal. Contributing threes, really aggressive rebounding point guard as well, but just doesn't look like he's going to become, he might be just inside the top 100 as a player this season, but there's a lot holding him back, and one of those is the coach, unfortunately, of his team. The dud of the night goes to Tony Parker of the San Antonio Spurs. He played 29 minutes and went 1 of 7 for just 2 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, and a steal. Definitely was not his best night. And the Spurs in general, with the exception of Kawhi Leonard, were pretty disappointing. Parker's had a much better season than I think most people could have projected. He's at 12.7 points, half a 3, 5 assists, and 0.8 steals. And after what he did in the summer playing for France at Eurobasket, you'd be shocked that he even got to those numbers. He's still obviously a must-own player, which is not something that he necessarily was at the start of the year. And this is just one of those games. The Patrick Beverley effect is part of that as well. So I'm not getting too worried about Tony Parker. Yes, the minutes are a bit of a concern because of the way that the Spurs do limit them. But even in the 27 minutes a game he's getting so far, he's a top 80 player. So you can hear that talk of the Spurs are going to limit minutes and all that sort of stuff. And yes, they do. But when he's producing top 80 level in 27 minutes a game, it's still top 80 level. It doesn't matter that it's in 27 minutes a game because it is still top 80 level. And you have to assess it using those sort of on those sort of lines. The DFS value play of the day. Christopher Bosch of the Miami Heat. He was a $7,200 player but almost put up 50 points. Ended up with 49. And this is something, again, we need to pay attention to. Going up against the Pelicans front court, there's big chances for power forwards and for centers to put up big numbers. And Bosch did exactly that. The overtime game obviously helped, but he was still very, very impressive. So he was the DFS value play of the day. All right, that's all the nightly awards for today. Let's move in and talk about these box scores now in that little bit of extra detail that we do on every show. Let's bring that up on the screen for you guys watching along on the video. The first game is the Miami Heat and the New Orleans Pelicans. We've touched on Anthony Davis's big game. Ryan Anderson was big too, 18-8 with 3 triples in 37 minutes. And Eric Gordon played a whopping 43 minutes for 16 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, and 2 steals. After he got benched and played really limited minutes, he's come back and he's playing fairly strongly. Obviously a bit of a dip from that top 50 sort of numbers he was putting up to start the season, but he's still a guy that has to be owned in all leagues. Jrue Holiday was a little bit quiet. His minutes restrictions look like they're going to be coming to an end pretty soon, which is great. 27 minutes for him here, 9 points, a 3, 3 rebounds, and 2 assists. Well, Tyreke Evans had a real stinker, 6, 6, and 7. But it's good that when he has a stinker and he shoots 2 for 9, he still gives you 6 rebounds and 7 assists. So still helping in some of those categories, but obviously with no threes, no steals, no blocks, poor percentages, and poor field goal percentage, and then poor scoring, not the greatest night for Tyreke Evans. Omer Asik continues to be terrible, as does Alonzo G. They combined for 2 points in their 35 minutes. And interesting to see that after the trade of Ish Smith, basically all of Ish's minutes went to Norris Cole. He played 31 minutes and scored 8 points. He did have 3 steals, but please don't add him in a standard league. He's not going to get 31 minutes moving forward. He's no good. Also, I think he boasts a PER of 4.7, which is horrible if you know anything about PER. I think it's only bettered by Tony Roten's PER of about 2.5. Do not add Norris Cole, despite the fact that 31 minutes looks tantalizing. He can't do anything in 31 minutes. Not much else to talk about from the Pelicans, I don't think. On to the Heat. Hassan Whiteside only played 25 minutes here. He did deal with early foul trouble, so that limited him. Still grabbed your 17 rebounds and still had 4 block shots. So he basically did enough, but obviously that brings to an end his streak of 30-plus minutes and he limited his upside a bit here. 44 minutes to Luol Deng. Didn't really get it done. 9 points, including 3 triples and 2 steals. He's still a back-end 12-team league guy. We didn't see Tyler Johnson again, so we meant Gerald Green got 26 minutes, and he nabbed 4 steals, which is something he hasn't been doing. Only 6 points, but he took 10 shots, so the shots were still there. 6 points and 6 rebounds, and as long as Johnson remains out, Green is going to get between 26 and 30 minutes a night and provide, you know, DFS upside, but really not a standard league guy for me. Goran Dragic was also back after a 1-game absence due to his sore wrists. 7 points, 6 assists in 40 minutes. Not the greatest night from Goran, but he can be better than that. But I don't think we can ever expect him to get back to the sort of numbers he had a couple of seasons ago in Phoenix. Well, at least not this year. And Dwayne Wade took a shitload of shots. He went 7 of 20 and 5 of 9 from the free throw line to end with 19.6 rebounds and 4 assists. But obviously that's a big negative in the percentage department for him. Justice Winslow also played 30 minutes, had a triple one, which is good for him, 9 points and 6 rebounds, but he's still a deep league dynasty player only. The next game up is the Chicago Bulls and the Oklahoma City Thunder. Big win for the Bulls on the road against the Thunder after all that's been going on with them. Jimmy Butler went 23 and 6 and also had 4 assists and 4 steals, so a good night there. But the front court is probably the most interesting thing. Taj Gibson with another big night. 34 minutes for Gibson. 13 and 10, a steal on a block. He has to be owned while Joakim Noah is out. That's 2 games, and he's got 30-plus minutes. Has to be owned. Pau Gasol went 21, 13 and 6 with 2 blocks, so a good night from him. And Nikola Mirotic started at the 3 again and just provided, again, why we love him in fantasy and why we hate him. 6 points, 1 3, 7 rebounds, 2 assists, 1 steal, 2 blocks. So completely all over the place in terms of value in every category, but only 16 minutes, 1 of 5 shooting, 1 of 5 from 3, all his shots were from 3, but hit all 3 of his free throws. The value there is incredible if he was able to get 30 minutes, but the way that he's playing, that doesn't look like it's a possibility. We're talking about a situation here where Joakim Noah is out, and he's still only getting 16 minutes. Behind Bobby Portis, who played 20 in this game. Now, Portis played 20 minutes and went 7-5-3 with a 3 and a steal. This is the opportunity for Portis to play 25 to 27 minutes, and he's not doing it. To me, he's not a standard league guy. I understand people who love the stash and love the upside, and I do too. I'm not going to say that I don't, but I don't think that he's going to become a top 100 player at any point this season. As for Mirotic, yeah, I can probably see dropping him now. If he can't get 25-plus minutes in this sort of scenario, and the 3 is just the worst for him. He shouldn't be playing the 3, but again, not convinced Fred Hoiberg has a great grasp on the NBA at this point in his career. Mirotic is someone who the upside is so tantalizing, but if it can't be realized due to minutes, then what does it do for you by holding onto him when he plays 17, 18 minutes a night? Look, this line is still standard league relevant. 7 rebounds, a steal, and 2 blocks with 3 of 3 from free throws. That's still relevant. That's still, you know, top 100-ish. So I can understand holding, but the frustration is palpable. And the more you hold on to him, if he's continuing to get lower minutes, you're going to miss out on other free agents as well. So you've got to bear that in mind. So as high as I was in the offseason and coming into the season and the preseason and the first 2 weeks of the year where he was putting up great lines, he's completely fallen out of favor. And it could revert, but how long do you have to wait for that to happen? Derrick Rose is terrible at the moment. 7 of 18 for 19 points, 4 rebounds, 1 assist. Just doesn't contribute in enough areas. He is not a must-own player in 12-team leagues. It really depends. If you're not punting field goal percentage, you pretty much can't own him. And speaking of terrible players, Tony Snell had 3 points in his 9 minutes. Onto the Thunder, Durant went 29, 9, and 7 with a triple one, while Russell Westbrook went 26, 7, and 8 and had 6 steals and a 3. So big nights from the big guys from the Thunder, except Russell Westbrook was an inexplicable 7 of 13 from the free throw line. So that really dropped down his value. He was also 9 of 23 from the field and had 6 turnovers. So some pretty disappointing percentage and efficiency numbers. And both KD and Russ shot terribly from 3. KD was 1 of 6 and Westbrook was 1 of 7. Overall, the standard of the basketball on Christmas Day was not high. There was a lot of scrappiness, a lot of poor shooting, a lot of low scoring. Very, very weird. Stephen Adams was limited to just 13 minutes, in which what should have been a good matchup for him against the Bulls, but he couldn't sort of keep up with the pace of the game. Enes Kanter got the big run there and had played 26 and went 14 and 13. And we know that he's basically a double-double if he gets 20-plus minutes. That's basically, you know, what he can do. But how often is it going to happen? We have barely seen Kanter being preferred to Adams all season. This is one of the only times it's happened. So to think that it's going to be a regular fixture going forward, I'm not buying into that. Serge Ibaka, only 6 points on 3 of 12 shooting. That's not good. 7 rebounds, 2 steals, and 2 blocks is fairly decent, though. And really, the rest of the Thunder, I'll probably... Deion Waiters is the other interesting one. Less than 20 minutes for the second consecutive game. 2 points, 2 assists, and a steal. He was a borderline 12-team league guy, but Anthony Morrow is getting more run, which he should. He should get more run over Waiters as it is, because he's a much better shooter and a different threat sort of guy. Waiters' value has dropped. He needed to be playing 32 minutes to have, or 30 minutes to be having any sort of 12-team league back-end value. For now, that is done with. The marquee game of the day, the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Golden State Warriors. Big win for the Warriors. Very low-scoring game. Kevin Love, 10 and 18 with 4 assists and a couple of blocks on some very bad shooting. 0 of 5 from 3, 5 of 16 from the field. And that teams up with Kyrie Irving going 4 of 15 from the field and 0 of 6 from 3. That is not going to happen to those two guys all that often. Interesting with Kyrie, he played 26 minutes in just his third game back, so clearly ramping the minutes back up. You would think it was not going to be far before he's back to a 30-minute a night performance. And with him getting 26 minutes, Matthew Dellavedova playing 31 minutes, Mo Williams went down to 5 minutes. It's safe to say that he can be dropped in basically all leagues. The Cavs have been preferring Dellavedova to Williams for a good stretch now. If Dally's going to get 30 minutes and Shumpert's going to get 29 and JR's going to get 29 and then Irving's going to have to get back to 30 as well, there's no spot for Williams in that rotation, so you can move on from him. Tristan Thompson was okay, 10 boards in 27 minutes, but he's strictly a rebound value player at the moment, and JR Smith had not a bad game, 4 threes for 14 points, but didn't do much else, and he's not someone that in a 10-team league, definitely he's not someone that needs to be held on to. LeBron was okay, 25 and 9 with a steal and 2 blocks, but 10 of 26 from the field and 4 of 9 from the free throw line definitely hampered his overall value. On the Warriors, Draymond Green got close to a triple-double, 22, 15, and 7, 2 threes, 2 blocks, very Draymond Green-esque game, and Steph went 19, 7, and 7 with a couple of steals, definitely not his best game, while Klay Thompson dropped 18 points on 6 of 16 shooting. As you can see, just bad shooting all over the place on Christmas Day. Shaun Livingston had his best game. He went 8 of 9, really bucking the trend of poor shooting. 16 points with 2 assists and a steal. He's been a sneaky sort of back-end or 14-team league guy with some stream 12-team ability. You don't expect him to go 8 of 9 very often, but he was killing it in this game. One of the big reasons the Warriors were able to hold on down the stretch. And this is 2 big games in a row for Andrew Bogut. 24 minutes, 7 rebounds, 4 blocks. If he can get 25 minutes a game, he's someone I want in a 12-team league, or someone who should be owned in a 12-team league. Not necessarily I want, because it depends on my team. But if he gets 24 minutes, he can block the shots, he can normally get 2 or 3 assists as well, and get you 8 or 9 rebounds. The problem is that he might play 19 minutes, and Festus Ezeli will play 25. Ezeli was still okay here as well. 4 rebounds and 2 blocks in his 17 minutes, but it's harder to own him in a 12-team league. Not much else to really talk about. Andre Iguodala had some pretty good defense on LeBron. A triple one for him, 7 points with 3 assists, but he's more of a back-end rotational, streaming 12-team league option guy as well. The San Antonio Spurs and the Houston Rockets. Kawhi Leonard continues to be fantastic. 27 and 4, 5 steals, 3 blocks, 2 threes, doing it everywhere. And LaMarcus Aldridge chimed in with 18 and 9 in his 36 minutes. LaMarcus Aldridge is currently ranked outside the top 70 this season, so that's something to keep in mind. He's producing solid numbers, but clearly nothing spectacular. Tim Duncan played 32 minutes. That's high for him. The Spurs do have a back-to-back, so watch for these guys like Duncan. And I think it's against... I'll check that in a sec. It's against someone who's not... Actually, let's bring it up now. The Spurs play the Denver Nuggets. Yeah, it's someone not good. So I think we're going to see a lot of these Spurs guys have their minutes reduced in tomorrow's action. Danny Green can't get reduced too much more. 22 minutes for him. 5 points, a 3, a steal, and a block. So a nice triple one, but just not getting it done. And like Nikola Mirotic, we know the upside is there for him, but the production hasn't met up to it at all, and he's no longer a must-hold player, I don't think. on the Rockets. Clint Capela played 32 minutes, but some of that is to combat the Spurs going with Duncan and Aldridge for so long. They had to go a bit bigger. He wasn't that great. Capela 6-5 with a block, while Terrence Jones had 14-6 in his 22 minutes. I don't think that Capela, Donatas Motiejunas, who played 6 minutes, or Jones are must-hold guys in 12-team leagues. I understand Terrence Jones' fantasy upside, but to me, I've said it plenty of times, he's not a good enough player to realise that upside in terms of getting enough run. James Harden, 24-9 with 2 threes and a block, and really struggled getting to the free throw line against Kawhi and against Danny Green. They did wrap him up. So to end up with 9 assists, at least you got something out of the game from Harden. And Dwight Howard had 11-12 with not a lot else. Trevor Ariza struggled. Patrick Beverley was terrible. 3 points, 3 assists and 2 steals. And Ty Lawson went 7-3-5 in 19 minutes. Overall, the Rockets got a win, but it was pretty much as ugly as it can get. The last game is the Clippers and the Lakers. The Clippers, as I mentioned before, had that huge lead and then took all their starters off. They were done for the night. And then their bench, which is just atrocious, let the Lakers get back into it. Chris Paul, 23-5-6 with 3 steals. Jondre Jordan had 14 rebounds and a block. And Blake Griffin went 13-12-7 with a steal and a block. While JJ Redick had 14 points with 3 threes. So that's their main players doing the bulk of the work. And then it goes to the bench guys. Luke Marmute, 6 points. Lance Stephenson, 3 points in 15 minutes. Wes Johnson had 8 points in his 11 minutes and not much else. There's just nothing from this bench unit, but we saw no Josh Smith again, as Cole Aldridge is preferred as the backup center. Now, he did nothing in this game. Aldridge, 1 assist and 1 steal, and it's just interesting to see the way the Clippers are running things at the moment by putting Aldridge out there. He can be a really good fantasy player if given the minutes, but that's not going to happen unless DeAndre Jordan goes down. On to the Lakers, Julius Randle. Byron Scott said before the game, yeah, Randle's going to play, but we don't know how much we're going to be able to use him due to his ankle. Well, it turns out they used him basically the same as they use him in every single game. 11-8 for Randle, a 3-3 steals on a pretty poor 3 of 11 shooting and 4 of 6 from the line, and that's one of those things that holds him back from being a top 100 guy as well. While Kobe Bryant wasn't that great, he sat down the stretch a lot in this game as the bench unit got them back into the game. Kobe went 12-3-3 with a couple of steals and 3 three-pointers. Jordan Clarkson, nothing too exciting there, 11-3-3. Roy Hibbert, 8-3 in 27 minutes. He doesn't have to be owned anywhere. He is really, really sagging off. And Lou Williams, just 7 points in 26 minutes, but he did sustain a small shoulder injury. It doesn't mean it's necessarily going to cost him any time, and I don't think that he should be dropped if you owned him because he had been putting up some pretty nice numbers. Let's just I think that he'll be better than this, and again, it was part of that. The bench is playing well, and let's let the bench get us back into the game and continue this while these guys who are the starters sit down and go from there. But Williams had been getting consistent run and consistent form, so I think you still need to hold on to him in pretty much most formats. All right, that is it for the review of the Christmas Day games. Stay tuned. I'm going to have a quick break, and then we're going to be back to talk about the 13 games for Saturday.
This is the part with just the guitar, while we wait on the bass and drums. I'll sing of love and you from afar. Well, here they come in now, me and the sky.
Guys, we are back now to look at these games from for Saturday. And just a quick point is that I can't access the FanDuel prices for most of the games at the moment. There's some sort of issue with accessing them. So the prices I'm going to be referring to today are going to be the prices for Moneyball, the sponsor of the podcast. Moneyball uses the same scoring as FanDuel. So when we talk about that, it'll be the same sort of situation. But I won't be able to reference the FanDuel pricing. And then at the end of the show, I won't be able to put up the best bets for the FanDuel, and hopefully if I get the FanDuel pricing fixed, or be able to tweet out the sort of value plays for the day using those FanDuel pricing. But at the moment, I can only access the pricing for about two or three games. So I'm just going to do it through Moneyball, talk value, talk what's going to happen in these games, hopefully, and without being able to reference specific prices, which I know is a massive pain in the ass. It's a pain in the ass for me as well. But unfortunately, I can't do much about it, considering when I go to look at FanDuel and try and get these prices, I get blocked. So unfortunately, I can't access them at the moment. And yeah, that's it. Let's talk about these games. The first game is the Washington Wizards and the Brooklyn Nets. The Wizards are favored by 2.5. The total is 206.5 points. Bradley Beal is doubtful. I don't think he's going to play. Nene, please, if he plays, it's a miracle. Same with Drew Gooden. They've been out for so long. I'm not really counting on them to play. Otto Porter's the other one we need to look out for. He is questionable. He's missed the last couple of games with a thigh bruise. And with him out, Jared Dudley's been getting extra run, and Kelly Oubre's been getting extra run as well. The best value guy on the board, though, is probably Garrett Temple, who's absorbed basically all of Bradley Beal's minutes. He's averaging 32.9 points across his last three games. Put up 26.7 in the last game. He's still a very low salary guy. He's 37 on Moneyball. That's very low. I think he's going to be one of the better guys to look at. It's three really strong games in a row for him. Yes, there's a risk because he's not a good player that he doesn't put up big numbers, but I think at that salary, you definitely have to consider him. And I also like Ramon Sessions, who's taking up more of the slack of Bradley Beal being out. He's at 4,100 on Moneyball. He's basically a 20-point guy at the moment. Got 24.3 in the last game. He's been pretty consistent, and the Brooklyn Nets allow the guards to put up big lines. So Ramon Sessions is a guy who could put up 25 points, and we're talking, you know, almost 6x value if he does that. So that's something to be definitely on the lookout for. John Wall at 9,600 again. Playing Brooklyn, guards get a big bump. John Wall, he could be a 50-point guy. He's averaging almost 46 across the last three games. Had 41 in the last one. I think that he's a really solid option here. And the other, Marcin Gortat, he's another guy. 7,100 priced on Moneyball. A 38-point average across the last three. That definitely makes up for that 7,100 salary. The Nets are sort of a break-even team against big men. So he can be used here. He was a little bit quiet in the last game, but he's definitely playing way more aggressively at the moment, so I'm okay with getting Marcin Gortat out there. And same with Jared Dudley. His price is up to 4,400 on Moneyball, but he's been a 28-point guy the last few games. He's had a 40-point game in his last five. If Otto Porter's out especially, Jared Dudley should get big minutes and should be worth looking at. On the Nets side of things, Joe Johnson's someone that you probably don't think you want to use, but going into the Wizards, who like going against the Nets, they allow shooting guards to put up big numbers. Joe Johnson's averaging 25.1 across the last three games. He put up 28 in the last game. Yes, he's priced at 5,000, but if he gives you 25 points, that's 5x value, and that's something you can consider. Bojan Bogdanovic, though, he's a minimum salary money ball guy. Had a good game in the last game, had been pretty poor before that. He's more of a tournament option for me, not quite the consistency I'm looking for. 7,600 for Brook Lopez. Been all basically a 40-point average across his last three games. Not quite as good in the last one. I think there's a little bit of intrigue there at that 7,600 price tag. And Jarrett Jack at 6,800. You never know what sort of Jarrett Jack you're going to get. Are you going to get good Jarrett Jack? Are you going to get bad Jarrett Jack? Against John Wall, I'm not all that keen in getting him out there. Kelly Oubre always comes into consideration if Otto Porter is out. He'll be a minimum salary guy, and he's going to, if he gives you 20 points, that's basically all you need. The next game is the Toronto Raptors and the Milwaukee Bucks. The Raptors are favored by 3.5 here. The total is 195. We could see the return of Jonas Valanciunas in this game. He's questionable at the moment. There's also a couple of other injuries we need to look at from the Raptors' point of view. Patrick Patterson was dealing with an illness, and James Johnson missed the last game with an ankle problem. So lots to check in Toronto. Don't think we're going to have Damari Carroll back for this one, though. On the Bucks side of things, Jared Bayless is listed as questionable at the moment. I'd be doubtful if he plays. If James Johnson plays, you'd assume that he'd go back into the starting lineup, and at 3,500, giving you 26.7 in the last game, he is someone that I think you can definitely use. And Terrence Ross is similar as well. He's at 3,600 on Moneyball. He's basically a 23-point guy from the last game, 21.5 across his last five. An easy matchup against the Bucks in terms of what shooting guards and wing players can do. He's someone that I can look at and think, yeah, this is not a bad, especially a punt option. John Henson is a guy that is hated by his coaches, apparently, but put up 25 in the last game at less than 4,000, 3,600 on Moneyball. Definitely someone to consider because you know that he can go in there and grab three or four blocks. He had six in the last game, and that really boosted his value up, probably more of a tournament option. Jonas Valanciunas at 5,500, that salary's come down a bit. That's pretty low. Do you go and use him if it's his first game back? I'll probably be a little bit hesitant in that situation. For the Bucks, Michael Carter-Williams, really rolling at the moment. 6,600 salary, 39 points across his last three games. The minutes have been there. The production's been there. Going up against Kyle Lowry is a little bit scary, but I think that he can still be a 30 to 35 point guy. And at 6,600, that's probably right where he needs to be. So I'm okay with using him. Luis Scola and Patrick Patterson, they're going to take a hit with Valanciunas coming back. And Bismack Biyombo obviously is in that same sort of boat. Giannis Antetokounmpo at 6,900. He put up 43 in the last game. Is he a 35-point guy? Probably not against the Raptors. I reckon you could get better value somewhere else. And 8,200 for DeMar DeRozan. 37.50 average across his last three. That's obviously really good, but at 8,200, you need it to go a little bit higher there. There is an opportunity against the Bucks. They're not the most difficult team for the wing players to play against. So you could see him having a 40-point game. But his upside is limited, but I think he's got a pretty solid floor. So he's not a bad cash game play if you put him in with some other high-value plays. 8,800 for Kyle Lowry feels too expensive at the moment. But I like 6,300 for Chris Middleton. He's been put up 40 points in the last game, a 35.8 average across the last three. At 6,300, you could do a lot worse than getting him out there. Whereas Greg Monroe is at 8,100 on Moneyball. That salary is way too high. He's had minutes about 25 for the last three games since returning from his injury. I don't want anything to do with Greg Monroe, nor do I want anything to do with OJ Mayo, who's had his minutes reduced in two of the last three games. The next game is the Miami Heat and the Orlando Magic. The Magic are favored by 3.5. The total is a very low 190.5. I don't think we're going to be seeing Josh McRoberts, and Tyler Johnson is considered questionable. Obviously, if Johnson is out, that means a bump to Gerald Green, and he becomes someone you can look at. As for the Magic guys, a lot of their better players are getting more consistent and higher minute totals at the moment. Evan Fournier at 34 minutes across his last three games, almost 30 points a game. He is someone you can consider. Nick Vucevic is getting 35 minutes a game and averaging 38 points. At 7,900, I think he is one of the better plays of the day, except he's going up against Hassan Whiteside, and that could be a limiting factor. Toby Harris getting 35 minutes a game across his last three games. He's averaging 27 points in that time frame. At 6,600, that's probably not enough, but he does have tournament-based upside where you could consider him. Lord Alfred Payton at 6,900 against the Heat, I don't think so. They're a real stopper for opposition point guards, so I don't want to use him. What I do want to look at is guards against the Magic, because guards against the Magic put up some pretty decent numbers and have done this season. Goran Dragic is the one you want to look at, but he's been so disappointing. At 6,100 for Goran Dragic, you can have a punt on that in a tournament, but it feels a little bit too high based on that salary that Moneyball's got. Again, I don't know the salaries on FanDuel at this point, but if it's down to 5,500, then I'm a little bit more excited. And Chris Bosh coming off a big game, he's priced at 7,500. Pretty break-even-ish sort of matchup against the Magic. He's averaging almost 39 across the last three. He's been in a pretty decent streak of form. I don't mind using him in this one, although coming off a back-to-back, I'm a little bit concerned, so I'd probably go in a different direction. I'm definitely going in a different direction to Victor Oladipo, who's averaging just 16.3 points in his last three games at just 28 minutes, so we can leave him alone. And the other guys like Jason Smith, Channing Frye, Aaron Gordon, Mario Hezonja, the minutes are just too low to really consider. Luol Deng is probably going to get big minutes, but his production is generally not worth it. The Memphis Grizzlies and the Charlotte Hornets are up next. The Hornets are favored by 3. The total is 194.5 points. No real injuries to be too concerned about there. Jeff Green is an intriguing guy at 4,300. He put up 46 points in the last game, but that's very un-Jeff Green-like. You can throw him into a tournament, but I do not want to be relying upon him in cash games. Same goes for Courtney Lee. Even though he's priced at 3,700, he just needs to get you 20 points to be valuable, but he's averaging 14 across the last three in 30 minutes, and that's really not that good. Jeremy Lin at 5,400 has been fairly solid, averaging 25.5 across those last three games, 28 across his last five, settled into a nice 30-minute role off the bench. Not someone that I'm necessarily all in on, but I'm not avoiding him. 7,100 for Nick Batum is probably not something that I want to get too involved with. And 5,300 for Matt Barnes. He had a stinker in the last game. I think people might be off him. He can easily throw up 27, 28 points in this one. So he's someone to have a look at, I think. Marvin Williams has just been really, really struggling at the moment. 5,300 is low salary, but he's not someone that I want to really get too into. And Mike Conley averaging 34.5 points across his last three games at 6,800. That's not bad. I can see using Mike Conley. He's been scoring pretty well. The minutes have been there for him. Now, don't get too enthralled by the 40 minutes he played in the last game. Mario Chalmers got ejected in that game pretty early on, so Conley had to run a lot more. Al Jefferson is returning in this game for the Hornets, so that's going to reduce the effectiveness of Frank Kaminsky, Cody Zeller, and Spencer Hawes. I'm not running any of those three, nor am I running Al Jefferson until we see how they use Jefferson in his return. He'd only been averaging a few minutes, well, not a few minutes. He's in his last five games he's played Jefferson, he's only been averaging 24 minutes. So it's not like he was just getting 30 minutes and going out there and pounding teams. He'd been really struggling. So I'm not thinking he's going to go back to that role, but it is going to cut into these other guys significantly. Marc Gasol has a 38-point average across his last three games. 8,300 on Moneyball feels a bit expensive, but if he's under 8,000, I'd look at him. But this is not an easy matchup for big men going up against the Hornets. They do restrict their fantasy value. Jeremy Lamb's just not getting enough run, so I think we can leave him alone pretty comfortably. The Houston Rockets and the New Orleans Pelicans is the next game. The Pelicans are actually favored by 1.5 here, with a total of 211.5. That feels wrong to me. Houston's been quietly getting a lot better. Big win for them on Christmas. Pelicans are still struggling. I'm not really sure of that, but maybe Vegas knows something that I don't, most likely. Where are we? Here we go. Anthony Davis at 10,100, averaging over 51 points across these last three games against a Rockets front court, which we know is bad. He is almost a must-play guy. Even though it's 10,000, you can find a lot of value in a lot of other areas. He's been putting up huge, huge numbers, so I'm all for using him. Tyreke Evans will be low-owned, 7,400. He's had, despite putting up just 18.7 points today, his three-game average is 38. That's how well he'd played prior to that, so I'm okay with using Tyreke. And Ryan Anderson gets that Houston front court bump too at 5,900 on Moneyball. He can be expected to probably put up a 27 or 28 point spot, and that's not too bad. Like I mentioned before, I'm avoiding guys like Clint Capela, Terrence Jones, Donatas Motiejunas, and Dwight Howard on a back-to-back here. Does he play 30 minutes? I would be highly doubtful. He played 36 against the Spurs. I think that despite how good the matchup looks, at 7,700, he needs to go for 38, 39 points, and I don't think that's something that's going to happen. If you want a contrarian play, Trevor Ariza has been really bad. 13.7 points in his last three games. He's at 5,800. He does have 30-point upside. He's someone that you can, maybe more than 30-point, he could be 35, 36-point upside. He's someone that you can look at, but I'm not all that intrigued with using him. Pat Beverley really struggled lately as well. He's priced at 4,700 on Moneyball. That rules him out to me. And Drew Holiday at 5,800. Yeah, he had a quiet game as well, but I'm a little bit more open to using him. But the Patrick Beverley effect makes me a little bit worried too. James Harden at 10,700. If I'm spending 10,000, I'm spending it on Anthony Davis. Harden struggled a bit today. It is the Pelicans' backcourt, which is not great. So Harden could have a massive game here. And look, you could easily put Davis and Harden into a lineup if you've got a lot of these other cheap options happening. But if I'm picking one of them, I'm picking Davis. The Boston Celtics and the Detroit Pistons is the next game we're going to take a look at. The Pistons are favored by 1.5 here. The total is 204. We do not know the status of Amir Johnson for the Celtics yet, and if he is out, Kelly Olynyk at 4,100 is one of those cheap options that we can use. He's been killing it lately, 36 points in the last game. He's a lock for 30 minutes if Amir Johnson, well, actually, he's not a lock because it's Brad Stevens, but he should get 30 minutes if Amir Johnson is out. Need to wait on that news to see how we use him. And 5,800 for Jared Sullinger. Again, if Amir Johnson is out, we should see 26 to 27 minutes from Jared Sullinger. So I like using him. Ersan Ilyasova is a tournament option for me. At 5,200 against a Celtics team that allows big men and power forwards in particular to put up numbers. He'd been relatively consistent lately, putting up some numbers in the mid-20s. This could be a nice spot for him. And Marcus Morris at 5,600 is also not a bad guy to look at. I also love now DeAndre Jordan at 10,000. Not John. Try that again. Andre Drummond at 10,200. Almost a 50-point average across his last three at 10,000 against the Celtics. And if he's going up against Olynyk and Sullinger, Drummond could really bang down low and put up some big numbers. I think that he's in line for a 50 to 55-point night here. Avery Bradley struggling at 5,200. Don't think I really want to get involved too much with him. And 8,400 for Isaiah Thomas is probably a little bit expensive. That means he needs to go for 40 points, which is not out of the realms of possibility, but not when you've got Kentavious Caldwell-Pope probably locking him down, who's one of the better on-ball defenders in the NBA. Speaking of Caldwell-Pope, his price has risen to 6,100 on Moneyball. That rules him out of my calculations. And Reggie Jackson is a 40-point average guy across his last three, but going up against the Celtics, they do shut down opposition point guards pretty consistently when Avery Bradley goes onto them. So I don't think I want to spend that big salary on Reggie Jackson. We also might see some Brandon Jennings for the first time, but obviously we're not using him. He's been active for the last couple of games, but he hasn't made it into one of them yet. The New York Knicks and the Atlanta Hawks, there is no spread for this game because we do not know the status of Carmelo Anthony. Also, Koch is questionable with that sprained ankle, Kylo Quinn, so we need to see whether he's up for it or not. As for the Hawks, Jeff Teague has been playing really well lately. 5,700 is a very low price tag on Moneyball. He used almost 50 points in the last game. He's a 31-point average. He is someone that you can have a look at against the Knicks and that tissue paper backcourt. Al Horford at 7,000 just hasn't been living up to expectations. There's a little bit of a chance for him to have a decent night here, but I'm not all that excited. I'd rather spend $700 less and use...
What's that just...
He's averaging 33.5 across the last three, almost dropped 50 in his last game. At 6,300, the upside is clearly there for him. If Mallow is out especially, I'm running with Kristaps, but if Mallow plays and he becomes more of a lukewarm play, not as red hot as what he was in that last game. 5,500 for Kent Bazemore. He's been a little bit lukewarm himself, just averaging 23.4 across the last three games. I think you can do better than him. And Carmelo at 8,600. He'd been playing pretty well before this ankle injury, but I don't want to get too excited about using him against the Hawks. I don't think it's a really great matchup for him. Paul Millsap at 8,400, that's just too expensive based on what he's been doing lately, averaging less than 30 points across his last three games. And Aaron Aflalo is always a bit of a lottery ticket. If you throw him into a tournament, maybe he actually hits some shots, because that's basically all that's going to happen for him. Don't really love using him. And Dennis Schroeder's price at 5,100 is too expensive to use on a bench guy whose minutes fluctuate depending on what Jeff Teague's doing. The Indiana Pacers and the Minnesota Timberwolves are up next. The Pacers are favored by 4.5. The total is 206.5 points here. George Hill was fantastic in the last game, but he had struggled prior to that. The Timberwolves are a fairly easy point guard matchup, though. So at 5,100 for George Hill, he can be used in tournaments and maybe in cash games as well. Whereas Karl Anthony Towns had a bit of a stinker in his last game. He's a 39-point average across the last three, 7,200. He is someone who I think bounces back after that somewhat down game. And Gorgui Dieng at 29 points across his last three. His salary hasn't quite caught up to his production yet. I think that he can be used in all sorts of lineups. Rick Rubio at 7,000. That probably feels a little bit high, especially against the Pacers and George Hill, who do shut down point guards pretty consistently. And Paul George at 9,100, just not providing that value, has been in a real funk lately, averaging just 32 points across his last five. And that's not bad, but when you're paying over 9,000, he needs to be a good 45 points guy to really return value, and he's just not doing it at the moment. 5,500 for Zach LaVine feels fair, but it also feels almost ceiling-like for him. So I don't think I want to go and use him, nor do I want to spend $7,000 on Andrew Wiggins, who's only averaging 20 points in his last three games. Not much else I think we really need to cover off in that one. The Denver Nuggets and the San Antonio Spurs, this is just beyond nasty here. We don't know injury status for a lot of guys from the Nuggets. Jameer Nelson's questionable. Emmanuel Mudiay is questionable. Danilo Gallinari is questionable. These three guys have a big impact on the daily fantasy value of these Denver Nuggets. Plus, factor in that they've got to play against Danny Green and Kawhi Leonard defensively, whoever happens to play. I'd be avoiding so many of these Nuggets guys because I just don't know what they're going to be able to do. Now, if Randy Foy gets another start at minimum salary, he put up 38 in the last game. He's a 28.8 average in his last three. He's someone you throw out there, definitely. if you got no Nelson and no Moutier. But if Nelson and Moutier are back, then none of them are able to be used. Nikola Jokic is a tournament option at 4,300. He's got a 26-point average across those last three games. He was clearly preferred to Joffrey Lavernier, even though he inexplicably sat on the bench while Mike Miller was trotted out in the starting lineup. I think Jokic has some appeal at 4,300. Danny Green's a tournament option only at 3,500. It's an easy matchup, so if there's any time he's going to get back on track, it's this one, but I don't place a huge amount of faith in that. And 9,100 for Kawhi Leonard, a 43 average in the last three games. He could play some limited minutes here. He played 39 against the Rockets today. Going up against the Nuggets, he could be a 29-minute situation. So it's not something that I really want to rely upon in cash games. Same goes for LaMarcus Aldridge, Tim Duncan, Manu Ginobili. These guys could actually sit the next game. It's going to throw a lot of things out of whack. Will Barton at 7,000. He's got a 41-point average. Does Kawhi go on Will Barton? Does Barton get Kawhi'd? There's one spot I'm not using Will Barton. It's against the Spurs, because we know that Kawhi, and Will Barton's not the caliber of players that Kawhi has destroyed over the last few games. I don't think that I want to get Will Barton out there and have him be subject to Kawhi Leonard's ridiculous defense. The Chicago Bulls and the Dallas Mavericks, the next game up. Darren Williams, we don't know his status. If I had to bet one way, I would say that Darren is out. And Devin Harris is also questionable with a hamstring issue. The best value on the board, though, is Taj Gibson at 4,500. Basically 30 minutes a game over his last few. Put up 31 in the last game. At less than 5,000, it makes sense to roster him almost everywhere. Nikola Mirotic is the same price as Taj Gibson, and he can put up, we know, really good fantasy lines, but the minutes just aren't there enough for him, so he is strictly maybe I'll throw him in the tournament. And the same goes for Chandler Parsons, who's at 4,200. He put up 32 in the last game, a big game, but then the game before that, he was brutally bad. So his consistency is not there at the moment. Coming off the bench, the minutes, we don't know which way they're necessarily going to go, although they appear to be trending towards 30 minutes on most nights. The consistency is just not there for Chandler Parsons in cash games. Nor is it really there for Wes Matthews, who's averaging a paltry 15.9 points across his last three games, and at 5,000, that just doesn't cut it. And Zaza Pachulia's production has dropped as well. He's only averaging less than 22 across the last five games, and at his salary, which is over 6,000, no, there's other guys I would much prefer. Darren Williams, I don't want to use him, coming back from a hamstring injury. Bobby Portis at 3,500, yep, throw him in, because he's averaging 22 points across the last three games. A tournament option that might pay off. It also might give you absolutely nothing. But at 3,500, he can be used and hope that it works out well. Don't want to use him in a cash game. Pau Gasol at 9,200, that seems expensive. But his average over the last three is 49 points. That's exceeding that value. So you can look at using him, but I'm not sure this is the greatest matchup for him. 8,500 for Jimmy Butler is okay. You can expect close to 40 points from Jimmy on most nights. Depending on who else is out there, though, not sold with using him. And the big one is JJ Barea, of course. If Darren Williams is out, Barea's price at 3,500. He put up 47 points in the last game. It's an easy matchup going against Derrick Rose. He could be in line for probably not 46 again. But could he go out there and get 30? Could he get 28? At minimum salary, I think you've got to use him in most spots. And Ray Felton's the other guy. He's priced at 5,300, so his salary's gone up. But there is a bit of a tournament upside for him, but his production has tailed off over the last few games, averaging just 21.6 across his last five. The next game on the slate is the Utah Jazz and the Los Angeles Clippers. The Clippers travel to Utah, and they're favored by one after their victory against the Lakers. The total is 195.5 in this one. Rod Hood at 4,400. He's averaging 26 across the last three games. He's definitely picking his play up. There's a chance that he has a stinker, but he's been pretty consistent lately, so I'm okay with using Hood. Derek Favors at 7,500, I don't mind using him. His production has been a little bit down as well, so I'm not getting overly excited about getting him out there. And same with Gordon Hayward at 7,200, had a real stinker in the last game. This is not all that difficult a matchup for him here, though, so if I'm using one of Hayward and Favors, I'd probably go and use Hayward, to be honest. Blake Griffin at 9,400. Just not getting enough happening, and going up against Favors, who's a really good defender, not sure I want to use him, but I do like Chris Paul at 8,900. He's got a 46-point average across those last three games. His lowest score in his last five is 38. That's a very high floor. I'm all for going and using Chris Paul at 8,400. DeAndre Jordan at 7,800, put up 30 today. He's basically 30 points every night. So you can use him, but you want him to do more at almost $8,000. It's not enough to give you 30 points, and the average of 29 across the last three sort of shows that that's not really what you want from him. The second last game of the night has the potential to be a real interesting one. The Philadelphia 76ers and the Phoenix Suns. Okay, Ish Smith at 3,800. We don't know what minutes he's going to get, but we've got him projected so far at 25 for this game, and I think that he puts up huge numbers in that role. He was great playing for the Sixers last year. 3,800, he's a guy that I think you have to have in pretty much every lineup, and especially going up against this Suns defense, which is not great. The Suns themselves are a mess. They're just horrible. Markieff Morris has been suspended for the next two games for throwing a towel at his coach. He's a nightmare. But there's going to be value here. Now, with Morris out, John Lewis should get back to having more minutes when he was inexplicably had them taken away. 4,700 for John Lewis, put up 31 in the last game against the Sixers. This is a great spot for him. Still don't really trust using Len and Chandler, but if I had to go with one, I reckon Alex Len could get big minutes here. We've seen the Suns, when they play against teams with big players, that the centers get big minutes. Now, Jahlil Okafor and Nerlens Noel are pretty big guys, so I think that Len could go out there and play 27 minutes. So at 4,800, he's at a tournament punt. Same with Tyson Chandler at 3,600. That's very low for Tyson Chandler. If he gives you 22 points, which if anyone could predict what Jeff Hornacek's going to do, he changes his starting lineup every game and then changes it at halftime as well. Who knows what the hell's going to happen with this rotation? So Len and Chandler become tournament options. TJ Warren will likely get minutes in the mid-20s, but at 4,000, he's not returning enough value, really. You know, 16 points is, you know what, 16 points is not too bad for 4,000. If he gets 20 points, it's okay, and against it's an easy matchup, but what's going to happen with the minutes? The only guys I can really even look at for cash games is probably Lua in this one with Morris out, and Brandon Knight at 6,800. He put up 36 in the last game. He's been relatively consistent, back in the starting lineup after a one-game absence. I can see using him in a cash game. Eric Bledsoe at 8,800 has been really good, but not lately. 22.4 is his average over the last three. Could he put up a massive line against the Sixers? Yes. Could he play 29 minutes against the Sixers? Also yes. Let's wait and see how that works out, but I'm not too keen with spending almost 9,000 on Eric Bledsoe in a cash game format. Nerlens Noel, averaging 26 across the last three at 5,400. I think that, especially with Ish Smith back, I'm excited to see what he's able to do. Maybe he gets you 30 points. He's someone to have a look at. And Jahlil Okafor at 6,400. The Suns do stop opposition centers, so I don't think that Okafor's a great option, but at 6,400, he's not terrible. There's something to be said for using him, but I'm not all that keen on it. Nor am I keen on Robert Covington or Isaiah Cannon or Jeremy Grant. And if you think that Ronnie Price is going to get 30 minutes again in the next game, good luck to... All I say is good luck to the Phoenix Suns if Ronnie Price is playing 30 minutes again, because that was pretty brutal. Carl Landry made his season debut. His minimum salary, he put up 20.5 points in his debut. Can he do it again? He's sort of coming against the right team to put up numbers. Maybe in a tournament at minimum salary, but probably not, to be honest. The last game of the night is the Cavs versus the Portland Trailblazers. No spread for this one yet because Damian Lillard is still listed as questionable with that plantar fasciitis. If he is out, CJ McCollum at 7,400 is averaging 35 points across his last three. He struggled a little bit in the game without Lillard, so maybe there's a too much focus on McCollum issue, and that might limit his upside. But still, at 7,400, I think that you want to go and get McCollum out there. Not much else really strikes me as huge value. I don't mind Myers Leonard at 3,800. He's trending back up. He put up 22 points in the last game. At 3,800 in a tournament, maybe, but not all that keen. Kevin Love is someone else that's interesting. 7,600 against the Blazers front court. He put up 40.6 against the Warriors. He could put up another 40 against the Blazers, and you'd be pretty confident with using him if you thought if he's going to get 40, you'd be very confident in using him. Not using Kyrie yet. 10,900 for LeBron. He's a 40-point guy basically every single night. I can understand using LeBron against the Blazers. I think that he'll be keen to have a much better shooting night than what we saw in that last game. 5,500 from Mason Plumlee is something that's interesting to me. He put up 26 on average across his last three games. He's relatively consistent, and at 5,500, I don't mind getting him out there. There's not much else, though, that I think is really much worth looking at. All right, guys, we are done for today's show. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_BBall and check out Basketball Monster and their Twitter feed, which is @BaskMonster. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or on YouTube and leave a review. It's always fantastic when you do that. It helps the show out significantly. So thank you to everybody who has done that and everybody who's gone to the sponsor sites and checked out their work and helped show that we can execute a promotion well. It's always much appreciated for you guys to do that. We are done. Hope you guys had a great Christmas. Hope you guys enjoy the 13-game festivity that is Boxing Day. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.